If you're an athlete, you know the greatest motivator of all is the fear of letting your teammates down. After all, a team is only as good as its weakest link. So you owe it to those wearing the same jersey as you to be your best every time you step on the field. That's why there's no vape in team. When you vape, you can expose your lungs to toxic chemicals that can damage your lungs. If you're a step behind, the team's a step behind. Brought to you by The Real Cost and the FDA.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code SPOTIFY for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
What's going on, fellow gamers? Welcome to the Multiplayer Gaming Podcast. We are three dads who talk casually about games, and today we have each prepared our own top five puzzle games of all time lists that we are going to break down. Please make sure to rate our show 5 stars, leave a written review, follow us on socials at Multiplayer Pod, and come sign up to support the show on Patreon. You'll get a shout out on the show, and you'll also get access to the exclusive Squadcast episodes, which release twice every month. You can sign up at multiplayersquad.com. I am your host, Paul, and joining me, I believe that he has witnessed many puzzles on an island arranged around a mountain in the middle. It's Josh.
I mean, living on an island sounds great, Paul. And I like to think that I'm pretty good at puzzles, so that sounds like my kind of island. Wait, is this Survivor?
Not quite. Oh, not exactly. No, okay. But you're
so
close.
No $1 million at stake.
No, it's only $500,000.
Okay. Now I'm out.
Apparently, a lot of puzzle games are on islands because joining us, I believe he's currently meeting with us virtually from an island called Myst, tinkering with the mechanisms and secrets to figure out what's going on. It's Michael.
Yeah, I'm really sorry I was late. I forgot the passcode that opens my front door, and it took me 26 minutes to run around the island, collect the clues, and finally get inside.
Oh, very nice. You know, I tried to introduce you guys with a little bit of a guess of some games we might hear about.
Maybe we'll see
The Witness, maybe Myst.
Nailed it!
Did I call both of your number ones? I guess we'll have to wait and see.
No, it's not my number one.
Okay, fair enough.
What, Myst? Yeah, I wouldn't expect it to be.
All right. Well, before we start breaking down our list, we do have a new Patreon supporter that we owe a shout out to.
Yes.
They came in as a legendary supporter. And so we want to give a huge shout out to Dave G.
Dave!
G Money.
Very nice.
Michael looked like he was going to say something so profound there, and like the long pause really got me.
I wasn't sure if it was my cue or not, and I was like, I have to say something. I'm like, gee.
I would like to say for Dave G, because I love DMZ, Dave.
Yes.
I've been playing it almost daily, and it's phenomenal. So just to set the record straight.
Yes, Dave is not in our Discord, but we did chat a little bit by email. He is a huge Warzone fan, and he did want to correct us that instead of comparing it to a Call of Duty version of Escape from Tarkov, he believes it is more aptly titled the cousin of Survival Mode in The Division. So I don't remember Survival Mode.
Interesting.
No lie, I was playing with two friends the other day, not simultaneously, but at different times, and they both compared it to The Division. Oddly enough. And I was like, that's a fair comparison. So Dave knows what he's talking about. And Dave, you are legendary, my friend. Thank you very much for the support.
Right. He just came in hot. He's like, I'm going to land this plane one time. I'm going to get it right. Boom.
Exactly. Yeah, so thank you so much, Dave. We very much appreciate the support. And I had just a couple quick questions for you guys, you know, before we all share our number five on our list. We did talk a little bit about what qualifies as a puzzle game, because there are some games that kind of skirt the line a little bit. So, like, what would you guys say actually qualifies as a puzzle game as opposed to a game that maybe has puzzles in it?
This one was tough because I asked you guys, being the elder statesman of this bunch, I was like, do the old Sierra games count? You know, like King's Quest and Heroes Quest and Police Quest and Leisure Suit Larry and all those older games. Because, I mean, let's be honest, the gameplay in those games is solving puzzles, you know. And then we were like, I don't know that that really counts in the spirit of like your top five puzzle games. So I went straight pure puzzle games with one exception in my list.
Yeah.
And I will argue that and till the day I die if you guys are like, oh, it's not really a puzzle game, but I'm ready to fight, but it's on my list. And then just in case I lose that argument, I have a backup too.
So my number one game is God of War. My number two puzzle game is God of War 2 called Ragnarok. I mean, there's puzzles in those games, so they're a puzzle game. Okay, that's not true at all. No, I want the same approaches. I actually might have gone a little bit more. Yeah, right. I actually might have gone a little bit more straight with it than Josh. I think all five of mine can be really considered puzzle games. So I don't know how to explain it, though.
I took to Steam and I looked for games that were tagged puzzle. And I'm seeing games like Star Wars Jedi Fallen Order.
Yeah,
and I'm like, no, if anyone drafts that, we're saying no, that's not a puzzle game. You know, we're not counting games like Zelda or Tomb Raider, even though, of course, they have puzzles in them. I kind of felt like if someone asks you, like if you were to take a poll of people out there, hey, in one word, how would you describe this game? I think they should probably say puzzle or solve within like the first two words.
Yeah.
That's kind of what I thought.
That's a really good way to put that. Yeah, I think so. And in that case, then I think, yeah, probably two of mine, you would get there within a couple of words, probably. And if not, you're wrong.
I will say this. Four out of my five are absolutely 100% pure artesian mountain spring water puzzle games.
Oh, so tasty puzzles.
Yeah. The other one, you guys may take some exception with, but we'll see.
we'll fire it. Fire it right off this list. Get out of here.
And then out of curiosity, before we dive into the lists, were your guys' games on your list relatively new or relatively old?
Old. There's been no good new puzzle games. I played the Superliminal, the weird perspective one. I played that one.
That's a cool one.
It was okay, you know. Like, but then that made me realize because I actually, when I was looking at these for my list, I pulled the date that they were released, and like all of these are old, man.
Dude, I'm so glad to hear that because I went to Metacritic and I looked for all puzzle games of all time and sorted by Metacritic rating. I went through the first 150 games. Guess how many came out in the last 10 years?
Oh, not many.
13.
Oh. Yeah, I was going to say, like, one?
One?
One.
Oh, my goodness. Okay. I was not going to guess just one.
Yeah. There were a lot in, like, 2009, 2010. There were a handful in 2011. Only one game out of the top 150 has come out in the last 10 years, and I know we are going to hear about it from Josh, so we'll just see where that one pops up in the list, because, of course, a certain game that I may have already referenced is only a couple years old. All right, so let's start by talking about our number fives. Who wants to go first? Who wants to share their number five?
Now, let's clarify, too, for everybody that's listening. These are our personal top five puzzle game lists, so there may be overlap, but this is not a tournament. This is not a we're going to nominate one above all others. This is my personal top five, Michael's personal top five, and Paul's personal top five. So just as we're talking about these games, you know, there may be some overlap. We may have them rated a little bit differently, but these are our personal tastes, basically.
Yes.
Some tastier than others. Because there are teasing beautiful crafted water puzzle games.
Let's start with you, Michael. I'm very curious to hear. What do you have coming in at number five?
Many people are going to hate this choice. It's so good. Imagine if you are the cruelest ruler over the lands. And in this land, you take these tiny little feathered animals and you put them in a slingshot. And you take that slingshot and you pull it back.
And you launch it
at those pigs. And you break that building down. It's a puzzle game. It's got different, like, you got to figure out how to get around
Angry Birds. It is a puzzle game.
I loved Angry Birds. I played so much Angry Birds, and I think a lot more people out there will probably also like Angry Birds a lot, because I'm looking at all these games, and I'm like, okay, I tried to divide mine up a little bit, like... I wanted like one VR game, one AAA game, one nostalgia game, one clear puzzle game, and one mobile game is kind of how it ended up. And I'm like, really, Angry Birds was just, that's a puzzle game easily because like, man, it gets hard after a while. You're like, I got to get the right arc on this. I got to use the right kind of bird. I only got so many of this kind of bird. I got to hit this and that. And I just was like, you know what? I've already said where I work, so I won't say that I played this game at work for a long time when we were slow, but I played this game at work a lot, and it helped me get through a lot of boring days. It was colorful, and the best thing about it was, right when you thought you were done with Angry Birds, they came out with like 74 more Angry Birds games.
And a movie.
I didn't watch the movie because I did not either. But I was like, you know what? Number 5 is going to Angry Birds. That game was fun. The sound effects were hilarious. The pigs with their little walking, going around. Oh, man, come on. Give me all the Angry Birds. I thought about actually downloading it and playing it again.
All right. I'm pretty sure neither Josh nor I have it on our list.
I don't. Sure. But it made me chuckle because I would consider that a puzzle game. Like, you are trying to get through the levels. Like what? How would you classify it? Action? It's not an action game. It's a level progression game. But that would be by definition you having to solve a puzzle to get to the next level.
Well, you only have certain things. Like certain birds do certain things, and you have to use them to get past certain parts.
It's like, where's my water? Cut the rope. Those, like, you have to think about how you solve that level.
Yeah. It's strategic. I would have never considered it a puzzle game, but, well, you guys both say it is, so that's cool.
Wait, is it a strategy? It's not a strategy game, is it? I wouldn't. I think it's a puzzle game. I would. When he said that, my brain went, oh, yeah.
I can give you my old number 5, but it's not very exciting.
No. We can count Angry Birds. Yeah. I loved Angry Birds when it came out. I think anybody who had an iPhone, like 99.9% of iPhones had Angry Birds on it at some point.
One of the few mobile games I've played.
Yeah.
All right. So Michael's got Angry Birds at number 5. I feel like that pick does come a little bit out of right field, but that's okay, Michael.
Hey, Josh, you know what, though? It's my top 5.
It is your top 5.
Is it your
top
5?
I'm waiting for Cut the Rope and Where's My Water to be like 4 and 3.
Yeah.
They're coming.
And considering Michael was joking, but immediately floated God of War as a puzzle game, and I was like, no, not a puzzle game.
Right, so what you do is you start way too extreme, so when you say something slightly less extreme, Paul's just like, I'll give it to you.
We did let Angry Birds slide now, so well done, Michael.
I did it for you.
All right, Josh, what do you have coming in number 5?
So mine is, this is a absolutely pure puzzle game, and it's probably one that a lot of people have never heard of. If you've been a fan of the show for a long time, you have heard me mention this game. But it's a game called Antechamber. It is on Steam. I don't know if it's on console or not. And I'm actually going to read the very brief description of this game because I think it kind of captures what it is very quickly here. So Antechamber is a mind-bending psychological exploration game where nothing can be taken for granted. Discover an Escher-like world where hallways wrap around upon each other, spaces reconfigure themselves, and accomplishing the impossible may just be the only way forward. Here's the cool thing about Antechamber. I've not ever played a puzzle game like it. It is pure puzzle. Like, everything in here is just mind-bending, you know, the way that you do things. But the cool gist of Antechamber is nothing is ever as it seems in this game. So you actually have to untrain your brain to like play this game. Like, this is a minor spoiler because it's right early in the game, but like one of these aha moments for me was you're in this dark hallway and the hallway turns like black and you're walking through it, and it's obviously that it's like an L-shaped hallway. But later on in the game, you're going through a level and it spits you out of that hallway because you realize that black wall was not a wall, it was a tunnel. That if you had just tried to walk into it, you would have realized you can walk through this wall because it wasn't just a black wall. It was actually like a void that you could walk into. And so that's kind of what this game does, is it teaches you don't take anything for granted. Like, that's the real angle of Antechamber, which I thought was really, really cool. And it's just neat. There's a lot of very like primary colors and just blacks and whites that it does. So it does feel like you're almost living in an odd painting or something like that. Came out in 2013. So we talk about these older games, right? 2013 is when it released. And if you don't believe me or my take on it, this game has a 95% rating on Steam, overwhelmingly positive with over 11,000 reviews. So if you like puzzle games, you really owe it to yourself to give Antichamber a try.
So I'm browsing the Steam reviews here while you were reading that description and sharing that. It does say here, if games are art, this one was made by Picasso.
Yeah.
Which I think kind of speaks to like the art style that you're talking about. And another person wrote, have a psychedelic trip without becoming a junkie. Yeah. 10 out of 10.
It really is. It does a lot of trip. It really does a lot of trippy things. It does use some perspective. Like there's one, it's been a long time since I've played it, but there's one room where it's like you're going down a stairway. And so you like, but when you turn around, you'd think you would go up a stairway, but like when you turn around, then you go down another stairway. It just does a lot of weird stuff like that. And that's how you kind of have to approach that game, is let me unlearn like everything that reality has taught me, and let me learn to think outside the box a little bit to solve these puzzles. And one of the best parts is some of these puzzles seem insanely hard, and then it's the stupidest, like most simple solution in the world. To where you like wind up drastically overthinking it. And if you had just done like the simplest, most common sense thing, you would have beaten this puzzle. And that's what I love about Antichamber, dude. It really just plays on a lot of that kind of stuff.
I love when puzzle games almost force you to think differently.
Yeah.
And to think outside the box. And a lot of the puzzles will seem impossible. And then as soon as it clicks, you just think, oh, I'm so stupid. Yeah. Why didn't I just do that in the beginning? And I love when puzzle games have that like aha moment and you can't believe you didn't see it before. I feel like that's always really rewarding. All right. Well, I have never played Antichamber, but it sounds really interesting. That's one that I'll have to keep an eye on. And at some point, if I'm bored, maybe I'll pick up something like that.
It's a strong recommendation from me. And like I said, 95% Steam rating. Apparently, people love this game.
Yeah. Looks like that one goes for $20.
Can I just say, too, that Josh kind of hit on a point, too, is that I realized I have not played enough puzzle games. Because, you know, looking at this, I'm like, are some of these games puzzle games or not? And I'll look up, like, hey, you know, top puzzle games, have I played many of these? Of which I have not played many. And I'm like, man, I need to play a lot more puzzle games. And so now I'm like, Antichamber, add it to the list. Because, like, I like them. And it's funny because I had a couple of games that did not make the list because apparently I used to play puzzle games a lot. Like, I've got a game... And nobody picked this one. It was called Siberia. We talked about it a long time ago. It starts with a C. One of my favorite games of all time, but like it's unplayable now. You cannot play it. So I need new puzzle games, so I'm playing Antichamber. That's what I'm going to do this Christmas break.
Michael already bought the deluxe edition on Steam.
Oh, let me see if I own it.
He owns the soundtrack. He's got the digital artwork.
Let me see if I already own it.
The guide. They send you the hard copy of the guide in the mail.
Strategy man. Guide.
Yep.
Oh, very nice. All right, coming in for me at my number five, this is actually a game that I did not beat, but it really left an impression on me, and I think it's very clever in how it operates. I have The Return of the Oberdin.
I almost put that game on my list.
Did you?
It was very, very close to being on my list because it's such a unique game. I just fizzled out on it, like all of a sudden, too.
Everyone fizzles out on that game. The first couple hours are so exhilarating and exciting because you're solving puzzles and figuring things out. And you kind of hit a wall where it's so hard to find new information that the game kind of starts grinding to a halt. But for anyone out there who's never heard of it, this game came out, I don't know, probably about 5 years ago, maybe a little bit less. And it was kind of all the rage for a little bit. Very unique art style. It has 1-bit graphics inspired by old Macintosh computers. This game is one color. It is green. And basically, you are an insurance inspector who has been called out to check out this ship called the Oberdin that actually went out in 1802. It had 60 passengers and it disappeared. 5 years later, the ship pops up out of nowhere. There are corpses on board. Everyone is either dead or missing. And you come in trying to figure out what happened to every single person in the crew. Are they alive and where are they? Or are they dead, and how did they die, and at the hands of what? And so the thing that kind of is like the mechanism for how that works in this game is that you have a magical pocket watch, and if you point it at a corpse and you activate it, it will let you see what happened when that person died. So it's almost like it gives you a screenshot of how they died, and you hear audio and you read it on the screen. And so, for example, to kind of explain how this works, maybe you see a corpse, you activate the watch, and it shows you a guy getting stabbed with a sword, and you hear the audio and someone screams, "Paul, watch out!" So now you know that the guy who got stabbed is Paul, so you pull up the ship manifest. How many Pauls were on the board? Oh, just one? Great. Now I can mark that guy. Paul died from a sword wound from an unknown attacker. And then later, as you start to piece who is who, you get to fill in all those gaps, and then the game finally ends. So it actually turns out to be a pretty elaborate story. I don't want to like share any major spoilers, but like, let's just say that there's some fantastical elements going on. The ship is going to be attacked by things that you don't necessarily see coming, and there's different factions on board, and it's a pretty elaborate story. And I think this one left a really strong impression on people because it's such a unique game.
It is very unique. The mechanics on it are really cool. The art style is very interesting because it's all just black and white, and it's pixely black and white, which really throws people off at first, but it really works for the game. The only exception I had with Return to Obra Dinn was it got really weird to me because you'll find a dead guy, you pull out your pocket watch, you go into their memories, and in their memories there's another dead person. So then you can pull out your pocket watch and go into that dead person's memories. So then you've got Inception going on.
Yes, a memory of a memory of a memory.
Yeah, and then I get so lost, and then I'm like, wait a minute, whose memory was I in? Like, what was I looking for? And it just got a little convoluted for me at that point. I agree with you 100%. I think it's absolutely phenomenal for the first few hours. It just got a little overly complicated for me at some point, and then, like I said, I just fizzled out on it. But I'm pretty sure that game's pretty cheap at this point, and it is a vastly different experience than just about any other video game out there. So even though I didn't finish it, I would highly recommend it to people.
So is it like the dead person that you see in their memory and they have a memory, is it because they were doing what you were doing when they died and looking at people's memories?
No.
It's just the magic of the pocket watch.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Don't think about it too hard.
Yeah, so less Inception, more just like Russian nesting doll. It's just there.
Kind of, yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, so this game has a 96% rating on Steam, and I absolutely say if you play it, as soon as it starts grinding to a halt, just quit. Yeah. And then just read spoilers online. You'll have a better experience. You'll love it for probably 5 to 6 hours, maybe at the very most. Maybe even more like 2 to 3. But you're really going to love those opening hours. And I really hope that more people make games like this. I love solving mysteries. And I love when you get to solve what happened just by showing up and playing detective. I think that's always a blast.
Yeah.
All right. Coming back around to you, Michael, what you got coming in at number 4?
I'm afraid to say it. I think you guys are going to make fun of me again.
Angry Birds 2.
Angry Birds 2, Pickle. The movie. Plants versus Zombies. No, I'm just kidding. I can't have two of them, right?
I actually thought about that game, Michael.
That was one of those that I almost picked. It was like that and Angry Birds, and I'm like, man, they were both really good. I just feel like Plants versus Zombies kind of wore out faster. All right, I'm gonna play this game real fast. I like this game because it can be played in virtual reality or outside of virtual reality. It's great with family and friends. It was unique and frustrating, not in like the Overcooked 2 frustrating. I know that Paul soured on this pretty fast because he said the puzzle gets kind of similar after a while, but I really liked Keep Talking and Nobody Explodes.
That was my honorable mention. I actually had it directly under Antichamber. So it's actually on my long list, not my short list, but I agree with you, man.
I have it on my list. It is number 4.
Number 4?
And Michael, you do not remember my thoughts about this game accurately because I played probably 50 hours of Keep Talking and Nobody Explodes. It was one of the best experiences I ever had with friends. It's just that once you've all memorized the manual, you can't play it anymore.
Yeah.
That was the only reason we stopped.
I paraphrase you poorly because I remember what you said was like, hey, at one point, like you were like, I wish they had more different puzzles.
Yeah.
Like maybe even more downloadable content. Like I would say, because I buy the downloadable content and stuff, like give us more puzzles now that we can buy later on. I'll buy more puzzle packs in a game for sure. If I've played the game for 50 hours, love it. I loved the game. It was so much fun because you truly had to cooperate, but it wasn't like cooperating frustratedly. Like, yeah, it could get heightened at times, but it's not like Overcooked where you're just like, you're mad at your family members. You're like, no, oh, we almost got it. It was so good. Let's try it again. And you're like, yeah, let's try it again. So some of the names for some of those symbols on the symbol puzzle just cracked me up every time. Some of the names I had for those, but
The beauty of Keep Talking and Nobody Explodes too is it's just wildly accessible to people. Like, right. I set it up, I played with my parents who were both like in their 70s, and I set it up on a laptop that they had that could not, because they're like, well, we don't have a computer. I'm like, you have this laptop, don't you? And they're like, yeah. And I was like, oh, it'll run on that just fine.
Yeah.
Because it'll run on a potato, which is great. And yeah. I set it up on the laptop, you know, and they loved it, man. And I mean, within, I don't know, 5-10 minutes of me just explaining how this game is going to work, we were all playing Keep Talking and Nobody Explodes.
Yep.
And then the beauty is you can play it remotely as well. You don't have to be in person. So if you've got somebody, you know, across the country, you know, that you want to hang out with, you just hop in Discord, you know, and then the game plays and you guys can all sit there and play real time together.
Yeah. And that's one of the things I like. My experience with my parents was a little different because you explained for a couple of minutes. I had to explain it every single time because I couldn't see what my parents were seeing because I only owned it for PlayStation Virtual Reality, so PSVR. And so it was my parents' first time ever in a VR headset, ever. And they're trying to figure out where the controller is. And I'm like, no, Dad, that's the X right there. And I'm like touching and moving my dad's thumb, which is an awkward experience for a grown man to do, to like grab his dad's thumb and be like, right here, Dad. It's okay. It's almost like what he was doing when he was 20 and I was like 2. He's like, son, here's how you tie your shoes. Let me help you by holding your hands. Now I'm doing this to my 62-year-old father. So it was different.
That's kind of a tough first VR experience,
right?
Defusing bombs. So if anyone out there doesn't know about this game, I remember when it released the first week, the front page of Reddit just kept getting pummeled of videos of like 8 people that were meeting and screaming about some bomb, and there was a countdown and there'd be 2 seconds left and they would defuse it and everyone would start screaming and go wild. And I was like, I don't know what this game is, but I'm buying it right now. And so, yeah, what makes it so cool is that you have one person who's defusing the bomb, but they are not allowed to look at any of the instructions. They have a bomb that's essentially covered in puzzles. And then everyone else who's playing, which can be as many people as you want, you have to describe what you see on the bomb. They are looking in the bomb manual and explaining to you how you're going to beat those individual puzzles. And it is an exhilarating experience when you are multitasking and you're shouting instructions to 4 different people to work on 4 different puzzles, and people are shouting things to you like cut the red wire. Someone else is shouting click on the Xbox symbol with the horse, or you know, whatever the crazy symbols were. And yeah, like we ended up having like our own shorthand language, mm-hmm. where we just knew, you know, A, B, B, A, B, A. And that just meant like whether you were going to cut the wire on the left or the right or whatever it was at the time. And that's the only reason that we quit, is that it just got too easy at the end. But yeah, what a fantastic game.
That's also a testament to the game, though, that you guys played it that much, that you got that good at it as well. You know? This game is an absolute blast. You can play it at a party. As long as one person has a laptop, then the other people just have the manuals in front of them. You can play it remotely. It's very simple to pick up and premise. It's literally just tell me what you see. Okay, I see symbols. Well, then somebody flips to the symbol section in the bomb manual and away you go. But there is a lot more strategy involved as you get comfortable with the game as well. And then, of course, you're always playing against the timer on the bomb, and you can't make mistakes because then you blow up the bomb. So it's really just an all-around great game. We actually did a deep dive on this, so if anybody is hearing this and goes, I want to know more, go listen to our deep dive on that, because we actually covered this game in full.
I forgot about that.
Released in 2015, Paul, so that's about when Reddit probably went crazy. 97% rating on Steam. So popular and well-regarded as well. And I'm pretty sure you can pick this game up for like $5 now.
Oh, probably.
And only one person needs to actually purchase the game. which is really nice. So because all you need is the one person to be able to describe the bomb, which is what the game part of it is, and print the manual. Right. So if you're looking for just a fun all around cheap, really exhilarating game to play, you cannot go wrong with Keep Talking and Nobody Explodes.
Well, you don't even have to print the manual if we do it in VR, because the TV is just the manual, but I would say print the manual. Also, I completely forgot. My kids don't listen to the show, but it came out like last month on the Switch, so we bought copies on the Switch so my kids can play on the Switch now.
Oh,
you can
play it
on separate Switches together. So that's also pretty cool, and it was dirt cheap. I think on Black Friday it was like $7.50 because it was half off.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
It's like one of those really stress-inducing games, but in a good way, where you're just trying to beat the clock as a team. You're not going against anybody. It's all of you working against the bomb. And I feel like those kind of co-op games can be so much fun.
Yeah.
Well, not to keep going because the pace is... it'd be great if I could get my words out right that this wouldn't take forever.
We need like a bell or a... We need some kind of sound for whenever Michael just stumbles the once per episode. We just go like ding, 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 ding.
The words are hard segment.
Words are hard. Yeah, we got fun with metaphors with Paul, and words are hard with Michael. I don't even drink. That's the funny part. No, here's the thing too, is that the one thing I like about it is the pacing is perfect. When it starts out, it's easy enough to where you can figure out what the puzzles are, and then it gets harder as you go.
And it's highly customizable. So you set it as hard or as easy as you want.
How short that sentence actually was supposed to be.
very nice. So that's the number four for both me and Michael. So that was a 2-for-1. All right, Josh, what do you have for your number four?
All right, number four for me is a game that I believe I have mentioned on this before. Maybe I did a quick take on it. I don't know. I do know that I've mentioned it on the show. And it is a game called The Talos Principle. If you are a fan of puzzle games, you have probably heard of this one because it is one of the more well-known and well-regarded puzzle games. This is a pure puzzle game. You are literally just trying to solve, you know, like a puzzle that's in a room or something like that. The cool thing about the Talos Principle is you play like an AI almost. You are a robot. You are in this beautiful kind of technology. Like there's technology around, but then you're in old ruins all the time. So it's this really neat mesh between the two. And where this game really gets going is great puzzles. The puzzles are varied and you encounter new ones as you go. You start manipulating time and stuff like that. But the really, really neat thing about the Talos Principle is the questions and the philosophical aspect of this game. Because you have a voice. There is Elohim. He is your creator. And you hear his voice, you see snippets and things like that. He's talking to you. He tells you about this paradise that you're in. And he just says, hey, you know, you just need to solve these puzzles and be content where you're at. But you find out while you're playing this game that this is just a created world and is not the real world. And he tells you, whatever you do, don't go to the tower. And off in the distance, there's this gigantic tower that stretches into the sky. So what does everybody do? Well, I want to know what's in the tower, right?
Tower.
And so it's this really neat philosophical thing because the game is different depending on the path that you go. If you just listen to Elohim and you're content to do the puzzles that he gives you, that's like almost one game. And if you start to rebel and you say, well, I want to know more about myself in this real world, and you start to go to the tower, the game kind of changes and it takes a different path. It's just a really, really neat experience. And the puzzles are phenomenal, but it's this really in-depth philosophical question that you're literally playing out as you play this game that really makes the Talos Principle stand out to me.
Paul, have you played this one?
I have. I own it. Okay. And I can't believe that this game is already 8 years old, because I remember when it came out. It does not feel like it's been that long. But yeah, this one is very highly regarded, 95% rating on Steam. It is a really good puzzle game. Highly recommended to other people. It's not on my list, but I really like it.
If it's a phenomenal puzzle game by itself, but the philosophical nature and the discovery aspect, because you don't just get the answers. Like there's these weird terminals where you actually have to type in like a query and stuff like that sometimes. And then there's this weird unknown entity that will answer you sometimes. And it'll just give you these, like, not everything is as it seems. Don't trust Elohim. You know, maybe you should think about visiting the tower. And it kind of like, it just kind of poses these questions, you know? And I love it, man. That game's so good.
Yeah, one of the things, because this came up a lot, because I don't know why, but almost every good puzzle game is also a VR port now. And so almost all the puzzle games that I play are VR ports. And so I actually have this one as well. I haven't started it yet. The funniest thing, since I haven't played it, that I found is that in researching for this episode, the Talos Principle is simultaneously listed on both of the top 25 lists that I looked at and the bottom five worst puzzle games ever made for VR. The reason being on why they said it was bad is because it's not casual enough. It's hard and it has philosophical ideas, and it's just not a casual puzzle game that people look for in a puzzle game. So apparently it's just like, this is not one of those you sit in for 5 minutes. It's like you are dedicating some time to playing this game, and it's only puzzles and they're hard.
Yeah, it's definitely a heavy thinker game too. Not as casual as you normally think with VR, but as we get more stuff like Half-Life Alyx and things like that, I think we're starting to see more, you know, more hard edge stuff on VR.
Oh, can I pick that as my puzzle game?
No. All right, well, we're going to take a short break and then stick around and you can hear our top three games of the puzzle genre of all time. We'll be right back. Okay, guys, coming back around to me, I guess I get to kick off the number threes on our lists here. My number three is a game that is rated 98% on Steam.
Ooh.
Very much an overwhelmingly positive game. I think it's one of the most clever puzzle games ever. I don't know if either of you have played it, though. This is a little game that came out a couple years ago called Baba Is You.
I've played Baba Is You, and so I hate good. That game.
It's so good. It is so clever. It you is don't like it, though.
I will say it's very clever. I don't know. Maybe I hit a puzzle I just couldn't figure out and I wasn't willing to cheat on it or something. But if you look, I have Baba Is You, and I feel like I've played probably a good 4 or 5 hours. I get why people love it. It just wasn't for me at a certain point. I think I loved it right up until that point, and then I went, this is stupid. I'm not playing this game anymore.
What? How do you even spell it? Oh, it literally is Baba Is You. Mm-hmm. Like Baba is like
B-A-B-A.
Baba sheep, or like how baby says bottle.
Yes.
And that's you.
Yes, that is you. It's like a sheep in the game. So what sets this puzzle game apart from every single other puzzle game, this game is an absolute unicorn, one of one. There is no other game like it. You get a very low resolution screen where you are a little sheep called Baba, and there are words on the screen that basically lay out the rules of your current puzzle. So there will literally be words that you can push and move around the screen to change the rules of the game in order for you to reach the end point or to create some kind of situation where you win. So for example, when you start out the game, it's pretty simple where you just see words like Baba is you, wall is stop, key is open, and flag is win. And so what you do is you can walk around the screen. If you try to walk into the door is closed, so it stops you. And you go and you push the key into the door and it unlocks it. You touch the flag and you win. It starts off very simple. All of a sudden, the game starts throwing at you words like and is and also and more. And you have to start rearranging these words where all of a sudden you're no longer Baba, because maybe you pushed it to say flag is you, and now you're moving the flag, and you can change things to where they'll collide, and then they'll disappear. So maybe you have rock is melt, and then if you push that into ice, then it disappears. And it just gets crazier and crazier, where you just are essentially like almost cheating. It's like you're changing the programming of the game by pushing these words around. And it's the funniest thing in the world, even to just watch other people play. And I was watching a streamer who's an engineer play this game, and I was just laughing the whole time because he's trying to analyze it. And you can't even really analyze the game. You kind of just have to start playing around with the word combinations. And this is kind of the epitome of where you're just stuck for forever. And all of a sudden you just realize that one word phrase that you were missing. And as soon as you figure that out, everything locks into place and you beat the level and you're just kind of left thinking, oh my goodness, this is the most clever puzzle game I've ever run across. And It's not for everybody, but man, if you like this game, you will absolutely love it.
I'm interested.
Yeah, it's really neat because you're changing the rules of the game. Like most puzzle games give you rules and say, okay, you have to solve this puzzle within these rules. Baba Is You basically throws that out the window and says the only way to solve this puzzle is to create the rules for the puzzle, and then you can solve it, you know? And
yeah,
it's weird. I do appreciate what Baba Is You is. Like I said, I just got to a point where I think I got stuck and I had to move some words and I just could not solve that one. And I just kind of threw my hands up and then never went back to it. But
that's when you just Google it, don't you?
Yeah, I mean, probably I probably should have. But I do agree with Paul. It is one of the most unique puzzle games that I think has ever... I don't know that there's another game like Baba Is You out there.
There's not, no.
I don't feel like I'm smart enough to play this game.
Yeah.
You'd be surprised. Sometimes you just tinker and like you'll screw stuff up all the time. And the game always lets you hold the Z button and it'll just undo all of your moves. So it tracks all of it. Press and hold it as long as you want, and it'll, you know, let you reverse time and redo whatever you need to. So it's not frustrating when you do something wrong. You just immediately undo and try something different. And so like you will do weird things in this game where all of a sudden you're controlling like all of the rocks, but there's 30 on the screen and they're all moving together. Or you'll be controlling multiple things at once, because maybe you'll do rock and flag is you, but they're like moving in different directions. You got to check this game out. It's $15. It's only 110 megabytes, so it holds no space on your hard drive, and 98% rating on Steam. Can't go wrong. All right. Coming around to you, Michael, what you got clocking in at number three?
I feel like I'm going to clock in at number three and get my hand slapped for probably this not being a puzzle game. But we're going to try it anyways. All right, we're going to play Jeopardy. Are you guys ready to play Jeopardy?
Sure.
Can I say that, by the way? Can I say that?
Yeah, why not?
This game, created by Alexei Pajitnov in 1985, allows players to rotate falling blocks strategically to clear levels.
What is Tetris, Michael?
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah, that's a puzzle
next
game.
Up, next up, Port and Potables for 800.
Now, let me ask you something, Michael, because I agree Tetris is 1,000% a puzzle game. It's probably the game that launched puzzle games into mainstream, to be honest.
Could be.
This is number three on your list? What number are we up to for you?
Three.
This is my nostalgia pick.
Do you love Tetris that much?
I think the thing is I loved it so much, but I have loved it again with what's it called? There's the new Tetris. You can play in VR as well.
Tetris Effect is beautiful.
Yeah,
a beautiful VR game.
I'm kind of putting them all as the same thing because it's still Tetris. It's just Tetris evolved, and so I think so. Like it's still fun. It's still exciting. It's still challenging. I just think. If you look at how many hours I've probably played that game, like, okay, so like 894 hours in Elite Dangerous, I might have more total hours in Tetris. You
really?
Know?
See, like, I appreciate
I love
what,
that
and
game.
This is, I am not trying to slander your pick by any means because I appreciate what Tetris is and what it has done. I mean, it's like up until Minecraft came around, it was the best selling game of all time, you know? And so, like, Tetris. Its simplicity, its competitiveness, what it does phenomenally well. I just hate the game. I suck at Tetris. Like, my brain does not work that way. You know what? I'm a smart dude. Like, I like puzzle games and I can critically think and all that stuff. And I freaking hate Tetris, man, because I'm just not good at it.
So like, you got to remember one thing about my list, Josh. This may surprise you. Okay, I've only played 5 puzzle games. So,
by
and
default.
I played this one a lot. So this one, so when I say earlier in the show, like I got my VR pick, I got my nostalgia pick. It's just because I got lucky and I happened to play one of each of those.
Now, have you played Tetris 99 on the Switch,
no.
Michael?
No.
Oh, it's awesome, dude. Tetris shines best, in my opinion, when it's competitive. Like, my wife is really good at Tetris and loves it. And I loved how you could play split screen and you could go against one another.
This is like you zap each other, right? Like, you can clear each other's bars or add to each other's screens.
There's 99
like that.
Players well, and you're outlasting all of them.
Oh, it's a Tetris battle royale. So
That's disgusting.
As people start losing, they get eliminated. And it's great. Go play it. It's free if you have a Switch, as long as you have, as long as you pay for the online subscription.
Yeah.
You can play it for free, and it's really fun.
Or do I waste my money every month on that because I never pick up the Switch?
Yeah.
Nice. All right. Well, that's a really good number three pick, Michael. I'm all about it. I love Tetris.
Solid. Thank you.
As much as I did mention this, but Tetris Effect, I got that game in VR. It is one of the more beautiful VR experiences, to be honest. Like, some of the levels are just like so zen-like, to where I almost wanted to try to slow down the pieces because I wanted just to see more of the effects in the levels, like stuff going on. That's a neat game.
You're going to use a mod to slow it down. So like a cheat mod.
Well, you know
how
you can just like, you know, the piece is going to drop. So you push down and it like auto drops.
Yeah.
Like I would just sit there and let it drop because I wanted to see the cool, like pixel whales floating, the space whales floating across the screen and stuff.
Yeah.
You know,
before we move on from Tetris, I got to bring up one thing. I think we've talked about it on the show before, but have you guys seen Human Tetris, like on the Japanese game shows?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Where they have like conveyor belts that have Tetris shapes and the person
has to
like do yoga in that move and the conveyor belt just comes and sometimes it just full out just nails the person and knocks them over. Oh, it's so funny. I love those videos.
Sometimes those shapes are impossible to get into. Yeah. Like I've seen it. I'm like, there's no way.
Yeah.
Nope.
You got to make sure everyone gets hit at some point. You can't let them just go forever. All right, Josh, what do you have for your number three?
Okay, number three for me, this is the one I'm going to skirt the boundaries a little bit on this. It's Outer Wilds. Outer Wilds involves a lot of puzzles. Now, I get that it is an exploration game, and some people might categorize it as exploration, but you are basically solving the puzzle of what happened. And throughout this game, you have to explore so that you understand more of that puzzle so that you can figure things out. And there is a lot of smaller puzzles to solve within that. The beauty of Outer Wilds is you're only solving these puzzles so that you gain information. If you started this game brand spanking new, you can beat this game in about 15 minutes from start to finish because the answer is right in front of you the entire time. Like, you are not gated in any way other than your lack of knowledge. So as you play Outer Wilds, you go, you explore these planets, you solve these puzzles, you get information, you take that information, you progress through that until ultimately you know how to get through the entire game. But the beauty is you could have done that from like second one, which I think is a phenomenal way to approach something. And yes, is this a puzzle game purely like, you know, the Talos Principle and Antichamber and stuff like that? No. But I'm going to skirt the rules a little bit on this one because I do feel like Outer Wilds by nature is a puzzle-based game.
Yeah.
It just also includes a lot of exploration, which I love those two together.
You're literally piecing together bits of information to put together the puzzle of what happened to these people.
Right.
I think it's absolutely a puzzle game.
Okay. Well, some people are like, well, it's exploration and you know, or, you know, action because you're flying around and you're landing on planets and stuff like that, too. So I won't beat this one into the ground because everybody has heard me talk about Outer Wilds and my love for this game. This is actually the newest puzzle game on my list.
On
came out
list.
In 2020.
Wow.
It's a 95% overall Steam rating out of 38,000 reviews. Outer Wilds is beloved by most people not named Paul.
Yeah. I'm in the 5% that doesn't like it.
Yeah, you are. You know, and so, but it, you know, anytime somebody's like recommend me a game, Outer Wilds is one of those because it is an incredible experience. And I'll just leave it at that cuz people have heard me talk this game into the ground.
So, sadly enough, when you said you were going to skirt the rules a little bit, I was really excited that I was going to add a sixth game to the list of puzzle games that I have played, but I still haven't played Outer Wilds, so I'm still at five puzzle games, guys. My top
Michael,
five.
Knowing what I know about you, I think you would genuinely love Outer Wilds. Like, I can understand why Paul doesn't like it, you know what I mean? But I feel like you would really enjoy it, too.
And I'm sure I would.
Last thing I'll say on this, if you go to the, every now and then on Reddit, I see people like, what's one of the most memorable games you've ever played? And Outer Wilds almost always makes that list because I can't spoil anything, but just because.
Yeah. All right. So moving on here, we're now up to our top two. There's a certain game I haven't heard yet that I think all three of us are going to have. So I think we'll have a little bit of overlap coming up soon. But my number two is a game that actually just came out a few months ago, a little game called Immortality. Now, I have brought this up a few times on the show recently, but I don't know if I ever really actually explained what the game is.
You did. So, you mentioned you have to go into like these clips and watch clips and stuff like that. But I'll be honest, I want you to explain this to me because I still have no idea what this game is.
So you can kind of tell as I have games like Baba Is You and Oberdin. These are games that are like very unique and revolutionary for puzzle games. None of these are traditional puzzle games per se, but Immortality is basically where there's a fictional actress who made three movies. I think they're in 1968, 1970, and 1999, and none of the movies were released. Something happened, but you don't know what, and the movies never came out. That actress has now gone missing, and you are basically handed the archival footage of all shot video of this actress. And there are so basically they film all of this as if they were happening in real life. So they have like fake talk show interviews. There are scenes from all three movies. There are scenes of her at parties that got recorded. And basically the way the game works is that you're going through scrubbing video footage. You can hit play. You get to watch the clip. And if you click anything inside it, it will bring up another video that has that item or something that looks similar to it. So if I see like a certain actor and I click them, it's going to give me another scene that has that same actor. Or if I click on a glass, now it's going to show me another glass in another scene. And what's really interesting about this is you can play the clips forward, but you can also rewind them in case you want to rewatch something. Well, this is getting little spoiler territory. The game takes a little bit of a supernatural twist where you start reversing and all of a sudden, like, people's faces change and you'll see a new figure pop up out of nowhere. And the game kind of hits you with like jump scare music. And that's when I was like, oh, this actually really just got interesting now, because am I seeing a ghost on the screen? Mm. Like, why all of a sudden did this person get swapped out for a different actor in this? So it's really weird and very odd, but at the same time, similar to Outer Wilds, you're getting little snippets of information everywhere, and then eventually, just by exploring enough of the game, you put together the full narrative and figure out what happened. So, very clever game. You can actually play it for free if you have Game Pass, and you can get it for free if you have Netflix. I did read in the reviews that the mobile port is not very good, so I recommend playing it on Xbox or on PC. But very, very clever puzzle game, and I can't wait to see more games come out like it.
Is there like a payoff? Is there like a just like a solution? Don't spoil it. Don't spoil it, but I'm saying like you go through all of this and then there's like the reveal or the payoff or something like that. Okay.
Yes, there are a couple of things in particular. It's not just like one thing, but you'll discover a couple things along the way where you're like, oh, that happened. Well, who's this? And how is that possible? And then you start to put it all together. It's almost like watching the movie Memento.
Oh,
except okay. If it's not just imagine it's not in reverse. It's literally just all the scenes are jumbled. And then all of a sudden you figure it out.
I'm going to have to play this one.
Yeah, this is officially, it's only because you didn't tell me it was free yet until just now, the first ever game on my Steam wish list. Every other game I wanted to buy, just bought it. The reason I didn't do that is because I didn't want to try to figure out how to change over the payment method from using the podcast to my own money while we're recording. I was going to do it later.
The last thing I'll say about it, I have a short quote here from The Guardian when they wrote their review of it. And here's what they had to say. Every now and then you play a video game that you just cannot stop thinking about. Candy Crush might leave colorful imprints on the back of your eyelids. The Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild may creep into your dreams. And then, very occasionally, a game comes along that is so entirely unlike anything you've ever played that it becomes an obsession. Immortality, the latest from lauded game maker Sam Barlow and his studio Half Mermaid, is one of those. It is something that has never existed before, a video game that is also three feature-length films wrapped around a mystery so compelling that I could not concentrate on anything else for days. It is so delicate and complex that it's difficult to figure out how it even works.
What? Michael is giggling to himself over here. I know, I missed whatever this is.
Hold on. I'm going to take a deep breath and get through it. The studio is called Half Mermaid.
Yes.
Hold on.
Half Mermaid.
Which half? Which half do you get? Because
vertical,
no
you get the left
mermaid.
Side.
You're either person or you're fish. Like,
no.
Hold on.
Split vertically.
Okay. I was like, you're either person or fish. There is no half mermaid. And yeah. In my head, as I was trying to work through it, I just couldn't stop laughing until I saw Josh's face looking at his confusion on why I was laughing, which made me laugh harder. Also, what did you find out what happened to Marissa Marcel?
You sure do. Yeah, you get your answers. It's not like Lost or something where you feel strung along. Like you're gonna get real answers.
Hold on, I have a question just because other folks that listen to the show might have the same question as me. You said Netflix. You can play this if you have Netflix. Do you play it on Netflix or do you play it with a code that you get from Netflix on your PC?
So, great question. Too bad Netflix is not a sponsor. If you have the Netflix
app... That is
true,
they're not. I'm just curious, because I'd like to play it on my TV.
Yeah, if you go on the Netflix app, there is a tab at the bottom for games, and if you click it, you'll see all the games you can get for free, and it'll give you a separate link that'll open inside Google Play or, like, the iOS store, and it lets you download it through the store, but because you have Netflix, it lets you download it for free.
Okay, cool. Yeah. I was just curious because I'm trying to find a way to play it on my TV because
how many hours is this game, Paul?
It's not on PlayStation. Xbox and it's on PC, but not PlayStation.
Yeah,
it's like an anti-exclusive.
To answer your question, Josh, it's kind of like Outer Wilds in that if you looked up the quickest way to get your answers, you could probably do it in like an hour. You could also potentially flounder and keep rewatching clips and you don't know what to do next. And you could play it for 100 hours and get really frustrated. this is kind of similar to Oberdin. I say play it until it feels like a grind and then just read spoilers.
Okay.
It is a very mature game. This is not one you can put on like on the TV in front of kids. The adult content is sporadic, but there's enough there that I'd say don't play this in front of the kids.
Right. Gotcha.
Yeah.
Good call.
All right, so moving on, we need the number 2 for Michael, right? Are we up to
Michael?
You?
Michael?
Yes, okay, so when I chose my number 2 versus my number 1, it's so hard because you look at both these games and, like, which one's a better puzzle game and which one is a game that I like more, right? And so how do you rank that? I'm going to rank it in the order of... One of these games made my top 10 list of all time. One of these games I do not believe did. It might have, but I don't think it did. And I'm going to put the one that I like more at number 2. Why am I doing this? No, heck no. Heck no. I'm just trying not to upset people here. All right, number 2 is Portal.
All right, Portal's my number 1.
And Portal 2.
What do you have, Josh? You have
Portal
it
2
list?
Is my number 1 game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For puzzles. Yeah. I mean, I like Portal 2 better than Portal 1 just because of the co-op nature of Portal 2. I mean, mm-hmm. honestly, they're not that different. So, I mean, are we just saying the Portal franchise?
I put Portal 1 and Portal 2 because I don't know which one I like more.
Initially, I had Portal 2 number 1 and Portal number 2. And then Michael mentioned if it's a series, I'm going to put them together. And I was like, okay, then I'll just put Portal number 1.
Yeah. Portal 2 for, I mean, just we'll just call it Portal. That's my number 1. It's probably one of the most beloved games of all time. It's one of the most accessible games of all time. I mentioned that before, but I mean, I think like if you have a 5-year-old, you can tell him like, "Hey, play this game. You got a green or you got a blue portal, yellow portal, you know?"
Yep. Yeah.
My daughter was playing it the other day, you know, with her friend, and it was like they were playing together and I walked in and I'm like, "Oh, you guys are playing Portal." And she's like, "Yeah, this is really fun." It's just a masterpiece, man. There's not really anything to not like about Portal.
It's funny, it's compelling, it's challenging, it's the best of all worlds.
Yeah.
It's not an FPS with puzzles in it, a puzzle game that masquerades as an FPS.
Yeah.
That was a quote that I saw when I was looking at it. I was like, that's absolutely true, I think. You know?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
There's nothing more fun than using the portal gun. There's a reason why they add it in games like Splitgate. It's that good that we have seen portals added into other games that you think would never have something like that. That's like how much it's permeated gaming culture.
And I don't know that I don't know what it is like on Metacritic. It might be number 1 on Metacritic of like all-time games or whatever.
I think it's way up there. Yeah, I do know.
I did look on Steam. 98% rating over a quarter of a million reviews. That's pretty much unheard of because you're always going to get the trolls that are like, I'm going to rate this a zero because everybody else likes it. You know?
Yeah.
I mean, if a 98% rating out of a quarter of a million reviews doesn't tell you something, then we can tell you that if you haven't played Portal or Portal 2, you are missing out on a slice of video game history, basically.
Yeah. When Josh used his first adjective to explain it, one of the most beloved games of all time, might be the most beloved game of all time. The games, both of them are incredible. And also they have the best villain, and I won a draft with it too. So.
Yep. Josh, if we pay you $100, can you play Portal in VR with us recording it?
I'd do that for $100. Yeah.
For $100?
Yep.
You're going to be vomiting the entire time.
That's fine. Oh, I'll vomit for $100. That's my price point. Now, wait a minute. You guys aren't going to do the thing where I just have to loop one portal over and over again. Like, we're actually trying to beat the levels, right? Like, you two just co-op. Make it like an endless loop. And like, all right, Michael, let's see. I give him a minute before he's throwing up right now.
I'm just thinking about all those times that you launch out of a portal and the whole room has to swing around to reorient you. Oh, it'd be so great.
Didn't we ask that question on one of the squad casts? Like, how long could you fall through a portal for?
Something like that. Yeah, we did. Yeah, we brought that up. Yeah.
And Josh was already nauseated just thinking about it.
Yeah.
So all three of us have Portal. That knocks out my number one, Josh's number one, and Michael's number two, huh?
I know what Michael's number one is now.
Yeah, I do too.
Yeah.
All right, so that leaves Josh. You're number two.
Okay, my number two, you mentioned it at the very beginning of the show. Mm. It's called The Witness. I don't know where I first heard about The Witness. I think I just saw like some gameplay and the colors of the game and the beauty of the game caught my eye. And I went, you know, I haven't played a puzzle game in a while. Let me check this out. And I was absolutely just amazed at how good The Witness was. The cool thing about The Witness is it teaches you the basics of the puzzles before it ramps up the difficulty. So you never go into something not knowing like what your like purpose of this puzzle is. It starts off very, very simple, and then it just ramps things up to a difficulty level where you feel like a super genius by the time you're solving these things later on. The other really cool thing about The Witness is it is an open world, so to speak. You are on an island, and if you get stuck, just go wander around. Find a different puzzle to do. Absolutely love The Witness. I've covered this on a quick take that I believe has been released to people as well. So if you want to hear my full thoughts on that, you can check that out. It's just one of the best pure puzzle games that I think I've ever played, to be honest. The puzzles vary. There's audio puzzles, there's visual puzzles, there's spatial puzzles, there's just all kinds of different puzzles, geometric puzzles. Like, it's just crazy the number, the variation of the puzzles in The Witness. And I think that's the other thing that really makes it stand apart. Like, I mentioned the Talos Principle. Those puzzles are great, but there's probably only like four or five different kinds that you come across, and there are different difficulty levels. The Witness probably has like 20 different kinds of puzzles with multiple variations of difficulty for each of those puzzle types too, which is really cool. Really sets it apart for me.
It's also still $40.
It's worth every penny.
That's the only like criticism a lot of people give that it's still a pricey game.
It is worth every penny, in my opinion, on that. It was released in 2016. It's got an 86% positive Steam rating. So it's actually one of the lower rated puzzle games on my list. I think it's because of the difficulty nature. The Witness has some really hard puzzles. I don't think a game has stumped me quite as much as The Witness has, but the beauty again is it teaches you. It's like, it's my fault that I can't figure this puzzle out because I'm not thinking enough to like, say like, what's the next evolution? Like, what did it try to teach me before? How do I use that to solve this? But it's my number two for a reason, because I go back to it every now and then just because of the variation in the puzzles.
Yeah, the first time I ever heard about it was on the show when you were talking about it. I did the same thing I just did. I pulled it up on Steam, looked at it, and said, I have to play this game.
Well, you guys already know all five that are on the list for me and Josh. So, Michael, you get the honors of going last. We just got to hear about your number one now.
That was not intentional at all. Wink, wink. Yeah. No, I'm just kidding.
Hijacking the high moment.
No, right. Hijacking the number one from the number one. Oh, boy. Look what I did. No, I don't know why I did this. Ultimately, like, you know, you look at these games and it's like, is Portal a better game than Myst? Probably. Yeah. Right. But, well, most definitely. But at the same point, like, I was thinking of a pure puzzle game. Like, my favorite puzzle game ever made is Myst. And it's like, yes, Portal is a puzzle game, but Myst is, like, a puzzle game. Portal can be other genres that it kind of dips into. And I know that I just said it, you know, as a puzzle game masquerades as an FPS. But at the same point, Myst is brilliant. And it stands the test of time because it keeps getting remade and re-modernized. And it just did last year in 2021. It is just as good. The music is the same. The nostalgia is there, but it's playable. Because let's be honest, Myst 1993 is not playable anymore. Josh is incorrect when he said Tetris was the top-selling game until Minecraft. It was actually Myst. When it came out in 1993, it sold 6 million copies, blew away the world, held the record for almost a decade, and it was only beaten by Minecraft. Now, that being said, there are several different iterations of Tetris, so you could possibly say that all of them combined outsold Myst, but as far as a pure game, this game literally launched essentially CD-ROM for gaming. You didn't really use that as much. People would go out and buy, like, you did have CD-ROM games. People would go out and install CD-ROMs in their computers, which back then were really expensive, just to play this game. It changed the world, and just the way they did it as well, with having a 3D environment that you would click through and still photos, so you would think you're looking at a 3D game. It just, I can keep going for a long time on this. I actually did a quick take on it. I don't know I don't think we've cycled through enough to get there yet or not.
No, it's still on the docket.
It's towards the end. But the whole thing is the game, you know, after, shoot, how many years is that? Is that 29 years or 19 years? 29 years.
29 years.
Ladies and gentlemen, after, math is hard when you go over that millennia, you know. After 29 years, the fact that it's still a very popular game, it's in VR, and they just redid it for Unreal Engine 4, and it's absolutely just as great as it always has been. Just, it's one of my favorite games of all time. I think it was my number three of all time, which admittedly was a nostalgia pick, but and so is this. And I'm not even slightly ashamed.
Yeah, if you're like 37 or older and knew someone who had a computer, they probably owned Myst.
That's true.
If you're younger than that, you'll probably have no idea what we're even talking about.
Yeah, it is. I mean, I will say, Michael, you gifted it to us in VR, and I actually dove into it for a little while on that, and it holds up to this day, to be honest. Yeah. Like, the puzzles in Myst are great. The atmosphere is great. I think one of the things that really catapulted it to the forefront was back in the day when you talk about the CD-ROM drive, it was the most beautiful thing you had ever seen on a computer. Honestly, I remember the days of seeing Myst when it first came out and going like, how is that possible? Like, on a computer, these are not pixelated graphics, you know? And I just remember thinking like, this is really neat. I didn't get into it when it released initially. I don't know why, but I kind of missed the Myst craze. you know, but I'm glad that you purchased it, you know, that you gifted it to us. Cause like I said, played it in VR and it does hold up. So, you know, if the younger people out there listening and going, hey, I want to see what this is about, it still translates well, in my opinion.
That's one of the coolest things about puzzle games. They tend to hold up far better than other genres because the focus is on solving a simple mechanic puzzle as opposed to the graphics or whatever. So I think that's one of the reasons we don't see a ton of puzzle games, because you can still go back and play all the old ones. They still play great. I'm sure you guys have a couple of games that didn't make your list that maybe you just want to give a quick shout out to. On my list, I've got a lot of games that are on mobile. I think puzzle games in particular really shine on mobile. Mm-hmm. I've got Mini Metro, The Room, Monument Valley, and The House of Da Vinci are all absolutely fantastic on mobile. I bet most of our listeners have probably played at least one or two of those. Do you guys have any other shout outs to give?
Yeah, Wordle.
Oh, Wordle. I was going to ask.
Wordle almost made number five, and Angry Birds took it.
I was going to jokingly say, like, I could put Sudoku number one. But that's really boring to talk about. So I didn't.
That's why I didn't. Because I'm like, but it's Wordle.
Speaking of Wordle, I think I've got a 100 game streak going on. So
nice,
got that going.
For me, there's some really good VR puzzle games, to be honest. Paul, you mentioned The Room. There is a phenomenal mm-hmm. VR game called The Room Dark Matter that's a really neat kind of creepy atmospheric puzzle game. I Expect You to Die 1 and 2 are an absolute blast to play. I highly recommend those to anybody with a Quest. You pick those up because they're well worth the money, and you do feel kind of like a spy solving these problems and stuff like that as well. And then I just kind of had a category, which were the old adventure puzzle games. I kind of mentioned those early, the old Sierra games, one called Shadowgate. I don't know if you guys remember that one, but you're trying to make your way through a castle and you were just solving puzzles and stuff like that. There is that combination, Return to Monkey Island. The Monkey Island games, they were adventure games, but a lot of what you did was solving puzzles at the same time. And I really enjoy that kind of genre. It's kind of been dead for a little while, but I like it a lot as well.
The adventure puzzle game.
Right.
Yeah.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Makes me sad that there's a dead genre.
Yeah, those.
Well, I mean,
RTS.
Return to Monkey Island just released, and it got really good reviews. I haven't had a chance to play it yet, so it's not completely dead, but I think
it's got a war came out just this year.
Oh my goodness. Get us out of here, Paul.
Well, with that being said, yeah, I think that wraps up everything for this episode.
Last game, last thought. Go me.
There you go. We did want to say thank you to everyone for listening. As a reminder, you can follow us on socials everywhere at Multiplayer Pod. You can also support our show and get those bonus episodes on Patreon at multiplayersquad.com. And we hope that you guys will come back and listen to our episode on Thursday where we break down This Week in Gaming. And until next time, happy gaming, everyone. We'll see you later.
I love you all so much. Thanks for dealing with us, and cheers.
All right. See you, everybody.